Live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Welcome to the worst week of financial news since about, maybe 2009. I'm Elise Glink, your host for the next 2 hours as we walk through. If we just start with what happened on Friday, I think we'd have 2 hours to fill. But I also want to take your questions, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. We're going to get to all the cool stuff going on in the ThinkLink community a little bit later on, but I just have to dive right in, okay? Worst week for stocks since the financial crisis. Worst week for the U.S. government, maybe ever. Downgraded by S&P. There was a flurry of back and forth. They did it on Friday after the markets closed. They wanted to wait before Asia opened. Asia opens in a little while. There's all kinds of stuff going on around this S&P. They shot back. The White House said their math was wrong. They shot back and said, hey, watch your step, U.S., because we'll downgrade you again. You're still on the watch list. Absolutely crazy. The unemployment numbers came out, and everybody said, oh, it went down from 9.2% to 9.1%. But if you look at the reason why, look, another 200,000 people left the workforce. In fact, the workforce participation rate is the lowest it's been since the early 1980s. I mean, we're barely over half of the available people who could work are working. And when you think about what it would take to just get back to an 8% unemployment rate, or true, with everybody participating, you'd need like 13.9 jobs. And we can't even string together a couple of months of 100,000 job growth. So really serious stuff, leading a bunch of news organizations to declare that perhaps we might be facing a double dip, or in another way of looking at it, we never got out, which is something I've been saying for quite a while. Are we really out of the recession? I know technically we're out of the recession, but this great recession isn't even behaving like a recession. In the first year or two after a recession ends, you should have seen tremendous return to the mean. You should have seen an incredible number of jobs being created. The last three recessions, we've hardly seen any jobs. What did that mean? Is this a new kind of recession we're facing? Or do we still, as some people say, this is still a massive credit crisis, and we need to deleverage all that credit. We need to get banks and lenders to write down loans. We need to get people on the right side of the balance sheet again. They're still underwater on their balance, on their credit. What do we need to do to get the American economy running again? And then we saw Fannie Mae's losses are still widening. It's just hard to believe that Fannie Mae has lost so much money. So you can see there's like all kinds of stuff that I want to talk about. And then this would have been its own little good story, but the State of America's Children 2011 was issued last month by the Children's Defense Fund right at the end of July, reporting on the impact of the recession on children's well-being, and it's been catastrophic. Catastrophic. Listen to some of these statistics. The number of children living in poverty has increased by 4 million since 2000. And the number of kids who fell into poverty, true poverty, between 2008 and 2009 was the largest single year increase ever recorded. This is our next generation. The number of homeless children in public schools increased 41% between the 2006-07 and 2008-09 school years. 41%. The number of homeless children in public... In 2009, an average of 15.6 million children received food stamps monthly. That's a 65% increase in 10 years. A majority of children in all racial groups and 79% or more of Black and Hispanic children in public schools cannot read or do math at grade level in the 4th, 8th, or 12th grades. Majority of children in all racial groups. The annual cost of a center-based child care for a four-year-old is more than the annual in-state tuition at a public four-year college in 33 states and the District of Columbia. And where is the federal budget cutting? And where are states cutting their budgets? They're looking right to K to 12. It's really, there's going to be some big big cut costs, cost cut there. There has to be. Like there has to be everywhere. And when you think about what this is doing to our next generation, this is the generation we're going to build our future with. Right? It's the next generation of Americans. It's grim. This is a devastating impact. It's our Great Depression. Very, very scary. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Lots to talk about today. Let's see if we can get a couple of phone calls in. Lines are wide open, guys, if you want to get in. You've been waiting. 404-872-0750. Joe joins us on the line from Athens. Joe, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Hi, Elise. I really appreciate you taking this call and all the stuff you have on Equifax and CBS and all of that. It's a great resource.
Thank you.
I feel a little like an ostrich this morning because I think I may be the only person alive who might be interested in spending some money, and I need your advice on it.
Okay, well, we want you to spend smart, so what can I help you with?
Oh, thank you. I hope that's what I'm doing or thinking of doing. I'm in my late 60s. My wife is in her mid-40s, mm-hmm. and she's fallen in love with a detached condominium in a senior area out in the center of the state. It's a 55-plus community. The first thing is that there's a real absence of anything like comparables. I'll be getting a buyer's agent, but I'm not even sure how you would price it. It seems to me that the buildings that are, the units that are available, there are three units available in the place.
Is this from the developer or resales from owners?
These are resales.
Okay.
The community started in the late 90s to early 2000s.
Okay.
And there are three units available, and they seem to be a little overpriced. How would you go about finding comps on something like that?
It's really, really tough. And it's really tough for the seller because the seller is the one who's got to prove the value.
Uh-huh.
Because you're going to get a loan for this. Or maybe, are you going to get a loan? I should ask that.
That was part of the question. I could either buy the house or provide for the upgrades. We've got about a $100,000 we'd like to soak into upgrading the buildings we'd buy.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be changing finishes in the building, and that would be increasing energy efficiency and that sort of thing.
I would be really nervous.
I could either float the purchase and then take a loan to upgrade, or I could make a 20% down payment and include the upgrades in the mortgage.
I think that one thing you have to look at is, has anything sold in this development?
The first person moved out of it last year.
And what did they do? They sell?
They died.
Yeah, I understand. And what happened to their property? Or is this one of the ones on the market?
It sold.
And what did it sell for?
It sold for about $210 to $220.
Okay. So what are the prices of the three units you're looking at?
There's one that's $195. There's one that is $225.
Okay.
And the other one is right in between there.
Okay. So you cannot move. It would not be smart for you to move into one of these units and spend $100,000. You will never get your money out. Or you might not get your money out for 10 or 20 years. So it's like having a pile of dollar bills, $100,000 bills, and lighting them on fire is what you're talking about doing.
Is that something we're planning, knowing that plans are worthless most of the time, on staying in it for the rest of my life?
Okay.
And probably hers.
So let's talk about that, because if it's a senior community, 55-plus, if you're not there, she doesn't qualify.
She does.
Because she's your wife?
With me. I'm sorry? Yes, because she's my wife.
And what happens if you die?
Then she's allowed to stay there for as long as she wishes.
She's grandfathered. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And so I guess one thing to say, though, is that as you rightly pointed this out, things change.
Mm-hmm.
So you may not be able to stay there. But
mm-hmm.
So as long as you understand that the $100,000 is fungible, because if you buy the unit for $195,000 and you sink $100,000 into it, You're real, and the last one that sold was 210. And you're going to buy one for not 195. You'll probably buy it for like 160.
Mm-hmm.
You put 100 in, you're at 260. So now your comp is your own plus the 210, and you've got 50,000 that is, you know, basically not going to, you're not going to get that out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you understand that, and it doesn't matter because you've got all this equity in the property, you know, I'm okay with you doing it, but I feel like things change, and this is a really sticky place. Now, if you were going to buy it for 160, 170,
mm-hmm.
and drive a hard bargain, and you were going to put 30,000 into it, so you got to 200,000,
mm-hmm.
I'd feel a lot more comfortable. So maybe you don't need the energy efficiency, which is really not a very good cost-benefit ratio, though it's okay for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you don't need to sink money there. Maybe you can do a sort of a minor upgrade of a kitchen that should only be about 10 or 11 years old. Maybe
mm-hmm.
you can do an upgrade of bathrooms and spend 30, 35, 40, not 100. That's a smarter investment. That makes me more comfortable because it gives you more options.
Would it be smarter to go ahead and ignore the condo community approach and go into a standalone home, house in a neighborhood?
In this 55-plus community?
No,
does she want the community?
In a regular, diversified neighborhood.
I think you have a better shot at recouping your investment, especially if you go somewhere which is a great community, but they can't sell, and so sellers are desperate, and prices are super low.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of spending $195, now you're going to spend $130 or $120, and you're going to put your $100 into it. So I think you have to look at some other options.
Okay. I thank you. That was what I was afraid you were going to say.
I'm sorry.
That's wonderful. You're going to have a real ugly morning this morning, I think, with all of the stuff I'm prying ostrich with.
Well, I don't know that there's not a silver lining out there, and that we won't have a light at the end of the tunnel. I think we will, but I feel like what's happened is we've gone down this tunnel, and everybody thought they were seeing a light. I mean, if you look at the stock market, they've been
mm-hmm.
seeing a light now for the last 2 years. None
mm-hmm.
of us have seen it. They must have very far vision. But now we've reached something. We thought it was the light at the end of the tunnel, and in fact, it was just a turn in the tunnel. And
mm-hmm.
so it concerns me. I really feel very strongly, Joan, and you know this if you listen to my show all the time, that unless people are working and unless people have jobs and jobs they can feel secure about, they are not going to go out and spend money. And we are tapped out as a society. We are tapped out with $4 a gallon gas and all the debt that we're carrying and the fact that we're not getting any more money in our jobs for the most part. I think as a society, we're pretty well tapped out. That's accepting everybody who shops at Tiffany's. But it's really a concern. So rebuilding the great American society is important, and we've got to figure out the right way to do it. Thanks so much for your call. Have a great Sunday. 20 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We're going to take some stock market calls next on News Talk WSB. 26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. This is the Elise Glink Show, 404-872-0750. Lousy economic news this week. We're parsing through it, taking your questions online all the time at thinkglink.com. Ron joins us on the line from Johns Creek. Hi, Ron. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I heard your comment a few minutes ago regarding budget cuts.
Mm-hmm.
At the local level, state level, and obviously the federal level. And one of the things that concerns me is the lack of attention that's being paid to where our politicians are choosing to cut. And in my opinion, what they're looking at is they're looking at cutting teachers and firefighters and policemen because they believe that's what it's going to take to get the public in general alarmed. And instead, they should be looking at cutting the bureaucracies and the administration, where all of the fat seems to be. I mean, and I'd like your opinion on that.
Well, I think my opinion is that there are a lot more teachers, firefighters, and police than there are, you know, layers of budget management. But I think one thing that's happening is that federal is not dictating where those cuts come. They're just saying to the state, you're going to have X hundred million less to do all these things. And then the states are choosing where to cut. And I think they're sort of looking around. And, you know, again, to your point, there's a real conflict of interest there because, you know, who wants to cut their own jobs and their own salaries? But I think that cutting teachers, firefighters, and police is absolutely the last thing that we should be doing. Did you see in Tottenham, London, yesterday, there was a major conflagration, a major outbreak, and it was in London. So we'll have to talk about that and figure out what to do next. Thanks for your call, Ron. 28 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glang. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glank is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
37 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glank. You're listening to the Elise Glank Show live on Sundays here 11 to 1 on News Talk WSB. Call in now 404-872-0750. Online all the time. Think Glink.com. And if you don't follow me on Twitter, you should. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. We are launching our brand new version of the Equifax personal finance blog. I think it's next week, so you want to start looking there, equifax.com/BLOG, for amazing information about taxes, insurance, and real estate. I do a lot of real estate writing there. Equifax.com/BLOG. So if you own stocks, just call it fear factor stock market, because Friday, when the market finally closed on Friday, the Dow was up 61 points, but it closed at 11,445. At one point on Friday, the Dow was down as much as 240 points. It has been a week of really big swings. The Dow was down nearly 6% for the week. The S&P 500 lost 7%. NASDAQ dropped 8%. It was the worst week for the S&P 500 and NASDAQ on a percentage basis since November of 2008, and the worst week for the Dow since March of 2009. So what was going on this week? Well, let's see. Tuesday, Congress, the day, which was, you know, August 2nd, the day that our borrowing power expired, Congress finally got around to passing, I guess the House of Reps did it Monday night late, and the Senate did it Tuesday morning, and then President Obama signed it right away. The Deficit Reduction Act, or whatever it is, it basically raised the debt ceiling, but it provided some cuts. Not a lot of cuts, but some cuts. So we all took a big sigh of relief and said, well, we're all done now. And then everybody woke up to all the other negative news this week, right? The unemployment numbers and the spending numbers and the salary numbers and all kinds of other stuff. And then everybody kind of got freaked out about Europe, because the European Central Bank said it agreed to buy Italian bonds in exchange for massive budget cuts, but traders said investors didn't want to hold stocks going into the weekend. And people are very nervous about what's going on in Italy. You know, you've got it's really called the pigs, right? It started with Greece, but you have Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain. They are at the heart of it. But everywhere through Europe, there could be all kinds of other chapters to this puzzle, or to this book, that story that nobody really knows yet. And after Thursday, when everybody got really nervous and stocks plunged 512 points for the Dow, which was the steepest point loss since October of 2008, things were starting to get interesting. So all three major indices have erased their gains for the year, are now deep into correction territories, right? That's 10% drop from recent highs. Very interesting to kind of see what happened. We also saw big losses abroad. Asia markets ended the session deep in the red following Thursday's sell-off in the U.S. The Shanghai Composite lost 2.2%. Hang Seng in Hong Kong plunged 4.3%. The Nikkei, 3.7%. At one point in time, the way that the interest rates were going, if you put $100,000 into something safe, you might have only gotten back $97,000. Things were kind of going crazy last week. And so it's kind of interesting to see where we are and think about it and think about what our own strategy should be, both in this country and around the world. And it got nervous enough that China actually said the U.S. should live within its means and then wanted to call a debt national debt crisis meeting to talk about the worldwide crisis, economic crisis, facing all the major players. China's worried. Where do we buy all of our Walmart stuff from? It's from China. So very, very interesting things came out of it this week. 41 minutes past the hour. Your thoughts, 404-872-0750. Doug joins us on the line from Flowery Branch. Hi, Doug.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. What do you think about what's going on?
Well, I definitely think that, first of all, let me say I'm not a pacifist, except to the extent that, I think we should defend our borders, obviously. But I'm kind of tired of having military in all these different countries. And I'm not talking about just on the battlefield. I'm talking about staying in Eastern Europe, staying in South Korea, every place we are around the world. So I'm all for slashing the military budget. However, I can guarantee you if that comes out, then you're really going to see the stock market swoon because, unfortunately, I think, and I don't have the statistics, a huge percentage of our manufacturing in this country anymore is weapons-based.
Yep.
And
gotta love Halliburton.
Yeah, but, you know, we have, I don't know, we have something like 10, 300-foot submarines prowling the oceans. We have aircraft carriers. We've got planes that, we've got so many planes that even Obama can throw a few at Libya just for the fun of it, it seems like. So we have this incredible military, but if anybody really thinks that somebody's going to try to take our shores, then that's just amazing.
Somebody tried in 2001. Hey, somebody tried. They killed, you know, how many thousands of people in New York? I mean, that was taking our shores, but in a different way, not the way the British came across in boats. So I do think that there's a need for military out there, but do I think that, you know, if you look deep, you'd find $600 toilets or $2,000 toilets or the equivalent in the military budget? Absolutely.
I just, again, though, you know, I would love to see it cut in half between personnel and machinery and all that. But, again, you've got so many companies and so many jobs tied into it. Unfortunately, I think we're, you know, in a really bad position. I could use a worse word, but I don't really know how we get out of that.
Please don't.
I don't know how we get out of this, to be quite honest with you.
I think it's tough, and I want to hear what everybody has to say about it, because I think, you know, and I did this when I filled in for Eric Erickson the other night. I said to people, call in. You know, what's your best idea? It's very easy to criticize what's going on in Capitol Hill, and there's a lot of criticism, blame to go around, but I feel like all of us need to start generating some really good ideas and putting those forth, because if the people we voted into office don't have the right ideas or don't have enough of the ideas or don't know how to put those ideas into practice, I mean, we're all pretty smart. So I think we all have to step up and try and fill that well a little bit. Jennifer joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Jennifer. Jennifer?
Hi, Lee.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm from Los Angeles. I'm just visiting my folks here.
Nice.
And I live in the Brentwood area, and there's a condominium for sale there that I have never bought a home. I'm in my late 40s, and because I've always rented the same place for over 20-something years. And because the homes there have always been so expensive, and now they've dropped. And so I have a chance to buy this particular condo, but I work on a percentage because I'm in sales. And so that's why the banks can't, the banks say I have to put in half of the money of the house,
mm-hmm.
because I am on a percentage and my gross income doesn't do very well. And, so it's a two bedroom and it's small, like over 1,000 square feet or something like that, a little bit more than that. And I'm just trying to decide if this is something I should go ahead and do now because of the prices have gone down and just take that money out, and that's the best thing to do with my savings. I've talked to my financial advisor, and he thinks it's probably a good thing for me to do.
Why does he think it's good for you?
Well, I guess because it's... He didn't really tell me why.
Well, you know what? I think you need to ask some more questions.
Need to ask him some more questions?
You need to ask him some questions. If he's going to recommend a course of action, you should understand exactly why. Right?
Uh-huh.
And you don't?
No.
So that would be the first step.
I guess because he felt that a house is a good investment, a condo is a good investment there, and to be for resale purposes if I decide to ever sell it.
Are you sure, or are you just that's what you think he thinks?
Well, I'm thinking that's what he thinks.
Yeah, I'd love to know what he really thinks. Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you're paying him. You might as well go and really understand what it is he's saying and write it down so you can look at it later and think about whether it makes sense for you. And you have to compare the cost of home ownership with the cost of renting in the same place. And what is your upside? You're going to tie up, you know, half of the amount of that property. So you're tying that up by putting it in the equity. That's going to lower your monthly payment. You have to look at all of the numbers and how it's going to affect your daily life. And then if the numbers work out, you know, heck, I'm all in favor of it. I think it could be a very good time to buy. Brentwood is fancy. It's where O.J. Simpson lived. You know, it's a great location. You're really close to everything. I love Brentwood. So buying a condo there just in general is probably nice, a nice idea, especially if you plan to stay there and you can make it affordable. But think about what happens if there's a special assessment, or what happens if your assessments go up, or what happens if you have a really bad year. Are you going to have enough savings to be able to put in to make up the difference? I don't want you getting into financial trouble simply because you have a bad year or two. So you got to think it through a little bit more and talk to your financial advisor a little bit more about how it really is going to affect you on a day-to-day basis. Enjoy your visit with your mom, Jennifer. 47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Bill joins us on the line. Hey, Bill.
How are you today?
Great. How are you?
I'm well. I know that everybody advises against timing the market, but about a month ago when the Dow, when it was running about 12,400, I pulled all my money out, about $140,000, and stuck it in cash.
Okay.
If it drops Monday, I'm probably, you know, if it drops significantly Monday, I've got a feeling it's going to go down in the tens, if not lower. I'll probably buy back in.
The problem with market timing is sometimes not selling, and you seem to have done that pretty well. The problem with market timing is knowing when to buy back. So
exactly.
If you have a plan for buying back, like, you know, Monday, what happens Monday if it doesn't go down and now it goes to 13,000?
I'll keep it in cash.
Okay. So I definitely feel like you might want to have a plan where no matter what happens on Monday, you take 10% of your money and you put it back in.
All right.
Right? You're never going to hit it exactly, and if you do, I think it's really lucky, but how lucky can you get? Like, is lightning going to strike twice for you? So you've got to mitigate the risk and come up with a plan that's going to get you back in, maybe 10% at a time. And then if it really goes down another, you know, 15%, then you could put more of it in. Go ahead.
Well, I've already picked up, you know, if I'd gotten in Friday, I picked up about 8%. But if it went down into the nines, I would probably just drop everything.
You'd put everything back in?
Yeah, because, I mean, okay. Because that's picking up probably about 20, 25%.
It is.
It will come back.
I think it's fine for you. You've thought it out. You've got the plan. You know what you're doing. I can't, you know, recommend market timing to everybody because I don't think it generally works for people. I don't think they have enough willpower to put things back in when they should.
Well, this is my first time doing it, and the one thing I've always heard is it's best to get out too early and get back in too soon.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But it sounds like you do have a plan, and you do know where you're going to be. I just would say if it stays where it is, and it just kind of goes up and down and up and down in this new trading area, you probably want to make sure that you at least reinvest a little bit of it so you don't miss it on the upside. But if you're perfectly comfortable with missing it on the upside, that's okay too. The latest news, weather, and traffic coming up at the top of the hour. Don't forget to pick up today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There's a special report that looks at the future of Atlanta. You can learn what it will take, or what the author of the story thinks it will take to build a new economy for Metro Atlanta. It is 10 before the hour, AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey, and midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glenn. Coming up next hour, we've got Mark Titel in the studio to talk a little bit about what's going on with short sales and foreclosures in his office this week. Some interesting thinking going on about HOAs and how they're complicating the process. We're going to talk more about that next hour here on News Talk WSB. Let's go back to the phones. Mike joins us on the line from Athens. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. What's on your mind today?
I was listening a little few minutes ago, and you had a call, and you were talking about the military spending, about the high expenses of all the products that the military uses.
Right. Doug was saying that he's afraid that he's not a pacifist, but he's a little tired of defending the whole world, and he'd like to slash the military budget, but he's worried because so much of that stuff actually is manufactured in the U.S.
I agree 100%. I'm retired military, and we do not need to be defending the whole world. I agree with him 100%. There are a lot of ways for us to cut our costs in the military without slashing the budget in half that would critically hinder our operations and our own security. And there are ways. There is a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse in the military spending. There's many items that the military needs every day that are very well way overpriced for them. The contractors, I believe what the military needs to do is go back to their contractors and look at these things and look at these contracts and prices and tell them that, you know, hey guys, you know, we can't keep doing this. The American public can't support it. And it's just not a very good thing. And we're wasting the taxpayers' dollars. There are many ways where they can cut back.
Give me an example or two of what you mean where stuff is way overpriced. Because I know, like, in hospitals, when they give you two Advil, it's like $84.
Well,
and it costs, like, pennies to make those.
Yeah, there's many items in the military. For instance, when I left the active component and went to the reserves are way underfunded.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever they needed items to do their training or to go on their active missions overseas, they would have to go to certain warehouses and have their higher-ups request and requisition these things, and they would see the prices at that time. And like you're saying, $2,000 for a toilet. Well, I mean, just chem sticks, light sticks that they use, everything that they do. They were like $18 a box.
And you could do so much more for so much less. It's a great point, Mike. And being from retired military, I think it carries a whole lot of weight. Thank you so much. I hope you'll get involved and help figure out a way to fix that. 58 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glenk. More on the economy coming up next on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glenk is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Titel with Realty First.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glenk Show. Live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. We're talking about the economy. We are online all the time at thinkglink.com. T-H-I-N-K-G-L-I-N-K. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter, guys. It is your place to get all things Glenk. Plus, when we announce our next event, which I'm hoping we're going to be able to do in a couple of weeks, very exciting event, you'll be able to be the first to know. And, of course, as you know, discounts abound. So, for the first. So, we will... please sign up for the free weekly newsletter. It's your place to think Glenk. So the markets are just about to open, I think, in the Far East. In Israel, this morning there's a note that their equivalent of, let's say, the S&P 500 index, their equivalent of that is already down 7%. I'm not sure if this is response to what happened in the U.S. on Friday, or this is the response to what happened in the U.S., I don't know, over the weekend. If this is backwards looking or forwards looking, not quite sure. Looking at what's going on for Asia Pacific for futures, doesn't look quite so drastic. The Hang Seng looks like it's down about 0.5% in the futures. And we'll just, you know, keep you updated as this goes, but very, very interesting to see what's going to happen today. And as which is really tomorrow, all the way abroad, and see how that changes as we go across. I want to talk about jobs for a few minutes because the Obama administration is touting 154,000 new private sector jobs in July. So, okay, that's better than it's been. but the Labor Department's report was kind of awful if you look at it. The unemployment rate is about 9.1%. That's down a tenth of a percent from June. That's official. But the report shows that we have 13.9 million unemployed people in this country, 6.2 million who have been out of work for more than 6 months, which is, I believe, a record high. But really telling is the percent of the civilian labor force that is working. So it's 63.9% of the civilian labor force, or about 153 million people, are working. It is the lowest ratio of employed to unemployed civilians since January of 1984. The employment to population ratio hit 58.1% in July. That's the lowest percentage since July of 1983. Now we're starting to live in the land of super high interest rates, right? The last time, back in 1982-83, remember, it was Jimmy Carter, and we had lines around the block for gas, and interest rates for mortgages hit like 18.2%. And in 1983, they were still pretty high. And so that was the land we were living in the last time the employment picture looked like this. So the participation rate going down means the unemployment rate looks a little better, but it's really bad for the economy. So according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, almost 3 million people are just marginally attached to the labor force. That means they want to work, they're able to work, but they stopped looking for a job maybe 4 weeks ago. And of those, about a little less than half are discouraged workers. So they've just thrown up their hands and walked away altogether. So the decline in the unemployment rate, to be really clear, is not about the fact that we've created lots of new jobs. In fact, it's really about people walking away. And the labor force dropped by almost 200,000 people. And the number of people seeking employment dipped by 156,000. They're discouraged. They're not finding what they're looking for. So what are the calculations? How many jobs would you have to create in this country to get the unemployment rate down to 6% in the next 36 months, right? One of the economists looking at this said that 13.9 million new jobs would have to be created to get our unemployment rate back to 6%. That is the same number of people currently unemployed. It will not bring the unemployment rate to zero. Because as you go through 36 months, right, you get more people and the participation rate is going to go up again because everybody's going to say, oh, it's a better jobs market and I'm going to get in and get a new job. So you would really need, up until Friday, or including Friday's report, one economist said that his firm has been calculating it would take 255,000 jobs created per month to get to an 8% unemployment rate by Election Day. Because we didn't hit that, now the number is 272,000 jobs created per month to get to an 8% unemployment rate by Election Day of 2012. It is really difficult to figure out how we're going to get there and how we're going to get all these people employed and get our country back to work. 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. It's 13 minutes past the hour. Howard joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Howard. Welcome to the program.
Elise, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. What about you?
Oh, I love Steely Dan.
I love Steely Dan, too. I'm so glad you noticed. It always makes us so happy when people notice our music.
Well, you know, you could play them all day long.
All right, we might do that. What else are you thinking about today?
Elise, I'm gonna tell you, I'm glad you're on there today. I think you're a soothing voice, and I just feel like that the people, the congressmen, senators, and the president we have right now are not going to be able to do anything about this particular crisis.
Well, that's sort of a depressing statement. What do you think needs to change to get us to a better place?
Well, it just seems like we waste a lot of time blaming this, that, and the other on the economy, on the jobs, and this, that, and the other. And I'm not so sure that the unemployment numbers, the inflation rate, and a lot of these numbers that we're seeing, at least, are actually true numbers anymore.
Okay, possible.
But I feel like that they keep changing the universe of people applying for jobs each month, and therefore it does show a little bit of a decrease in the unemployment rate, But there are a whole lot of people out there who have just gave up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think if you look at the U6 for the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that's the fullest measure of unemployment. I think you'd see all those numbers right there in front of you.
Right. But I would. I don't really expect anything to get better until we have a change of a lot of people that are making our laws today.
Interesting. And who do you hope is going to step in? Who do you think has the right ideas? Because I look out at all the parties, and I'm not sure I see anybody with great ideas.
I'm not so sure who's going to be the candidates, mm-hmm. at least, but I think the only hope right now for this country is the Tea Party.
Okay. Well, I'd love to hear, you know, more specifics from them about how to actually make things work, because I think they have a lot of good talking points. But right. I don't think they have a lot of good specifics. And when you okay. ask them for specifics, you don't really get specifics. So you get more talking points. So I'm hoping as the election continues, we're going to hear from all parties on how to really specifically change things so that I think we can all make an intelligent decision.
Right.
So, good. Anything else?
I think that's it, and like I said, I'm glad you're on the air today, Elise.
Well, thanks so much, Howard. I'm glad you called in. 15 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Tim joins us on the line. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Elise. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. What are you thinking about today?
Well, I was calling about real estate investment, mm-hmm. but I will say with your last caller, I think the best way to fix our current system is to find people who use common sense methods and get them in office. But that's hard to do.
I actually think that if you just made everybody who's elected in Congress, no matter what party, mm-hmm. actually do things that we all have to do, like buy their own gas and buy their own health insurance and get their own health club memberships and actually rent a place to live instead of sleeping on their couch... I think if you did all of that, I think we would inject more common sense into the system. I think we've created a bubble in Washington, and once you enter that bubble, I think it's really hard to figure out what's going on with the rest of us out here.
Well, and also they ought to be willing to give up their salary until they can balance a budget. But
well, how about if they just give up, like, they have to have a regular 401k like everybody else? What if they just had to do that and save for their own retirements?
Yeah, I think that would bother them.
Yeah, that might bother them enough to actually think about things. But anyway, what is your real estate question?
Well, I'm looking at some different properties. I'm trying to decide if this is a good time to buy and then try to sell. What I'm doing, I'm in pretty good shape. My wife and I both work. I have my own insurance business, and we're debt-free, but I was thinking of buying a couple houses and then reselling them because I've got some clients who have done it and bought houses for $25,000 that were worth $100,000 and sold them for $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my question is, what do you think, is that something that's happening a lot, or is that a good investment?
Well, anytime you can double your money, it's a good investment. But there are so many problems with real estate investing right now that I think for the untested person, it's pretty hard. I'd really like to see you go with one of your clients who's doing that and offer to put up money and do one together so you can see the success and how much it really costs. Because if they buy for $25,000 and they put $10,000 or $15,000 into it, it's a $40,000 deal. There's some costs for sale. You sell it, and yeah, if you've invested $40,000 and you get $50,000 back, right? Or it's maybe you invest $45,000 including the selling expenses and you get $50,000 back. It's a $5,000 profit. Not that much. It's 10% of the investment, but it's just not that much money. It is a whole lot of work and a huge amount of risk. So
would
I think you have to see them doing it.
If you buy them, is it better to rent them or sell them? I guess that's my question.
Well, I think I would buy them and I would rent them, do lease with an option to buy, so that people who are coming in are giving you a non-refundable option fee. They are going to treat the property better because they think they're going to maybe buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would figure out a way to do it that way. Even if you hold the paper for a certain period of time, you know, that to me is a better bet than just sort of simply trying to fix and flip houses. I just think that model is a little tired at the moment.
Got it.
So people are doing it, they're making money at it, but I think it's harder than it looks. I think a lot can go wrong, and I think you can easily wind up with a lemon where you buy it for 25 and you put 100 in and you can only sell it for 70.
Well, I sure do appreciate that. That's what I needed to hear.
You know, on my website and at the ThinkLink store, we have some ebooks about investing in real estate and some of the tricks of the trade. And if you just go to thinklinkstore.com, thinklinkstore.com, we have podcasts from people who joined our foreclosure seminars, and we've got these 5 ebooks, and you can just buy them and read about it, because I think until you learn a lot more, and then I think you participate with one of your clients, put up some money and watch them do it, I don't know that you should really be, that should really be something you're sinking a whole lot of money into. It worries me tremendously what's going on out there, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong in the real estate market still. 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glenk, 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glenk Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. It's Carathon Week, everybody. I'm so excited. I have a special show, my annual show with Walter Reeves, Thursday night from 7 to 10, I think. We will be auctioning ourselves off, as we always do. It always produces a few laughs. We will be, come to your house. You know, we're going to auction this off. Walter and I will show up, food and treats in hand, and provide you with inside and out of your house advice. Every year we do this for charity. We're raising money to cure cancer in kids. Thursday, all the fun starts. I can't wait. And then I will be, as I always am, in the call center announcing the totals of in the afternoons on Thursday and Friday as well. So it's going to be a great time. There's all kinds of fun and games planned. We hope you'll join us for this year Carathon. So exciting on News Talk WSB. Let's go back to the phones and see what everybody else is thinking about. Ron joins us on the line. Hi, Ron. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Elise. I told your call screener there that, you know, I have a simple solution to the economy. You know, we just have too much in too few hands. You know, it's like anything. There's a law of diminishing return. If you overtax a population, you'll destroy the economy. But if all the money ends up in one place, you'll destroy the economy. We have monopolistic practices in this country that are just out of control. If you want to create about a 500,000 jobs in Walmart, you know, get rid of Walmart. You see a lot of jobs created.
Well, but I will also lose a 500,000 jobs, but I don't think we want to lose that many jobs. Actually, Walmart now has 1 million people employed. But I thank you so much for your comment, Ron. It's 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glenk. Mark Titel is going to give us some short sale and foreclosure information coming up next on News Talk WSB.
Sunday, Elise Glenk is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glenk. Thanks for joining us today. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglenk.com. Excuse me. I got an email from somebody who said there are all kinds of people who are really nice people and they love the show, and that we all need to think about that there are, our listeners include people who have wealth and have not, are generous, care about others, and really care about what happens to the economy. And I have to say that I really appreciate those kinds of emails, because I do believe that so many of us are those things. We do care about the economy. We do care about people. And I am concerned when I see people just not thinking about those less fortunate than themselves. I mean, it's one of the great tenets of religion that we should care for those of us who can't care for themselves. And I think in this situation, we have lots and lots of people, millions of people who are in real trouble. And I'd like to think that all of our listeners are really out there thinking about them. 37 minutes past the hour. Let's go back, take a few more calls. Blake joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Blake.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to make a quick comment. I had a mortgage question, but I want to make a quick comment. I agree with you. I think that these politicians in Congress need to be held more accountable. And I think the biggest reason that they can't be is because of seniority. These new members come in, and they have to suck up to all the senior members so they can get put on committees and all these other jobs, and they end up compromising on the things that they stood for during the election and the things that they got elected for.
You know what's interesting, though? I would say to you that that has been the case for all of the elections I've ever seen in my lifetime, and I'm 47.
Yeah,
This time, you've got people who are the newbies, the Tea Partiers, who have come in and are calling the shots. And I'm seeing sort of the reverse thing happened, that some of the senior politicians who maybe understand you need to compromise to get some things done in Washington don't or can't because they feel like their hands are tied. And I think that's a really interesting reversal of the way politics has always worked. To your point, I think it's usually the other way around.
I know that there's been a little bit of it, but to get the economy and everything back in order and the real America, you're going to have to change a lot of these politicians, not just a few. And the Tea Party's done a great job by awakening America and really showing what's really going on in Washington. But I want to make sure that people don't stop, because it doesn't stop with 10 or 20 politicians. You know, there's hundreds of members in there, and they're all making deals. But like the debt ceiling, when it came down to actually making the deals, you know, they were six members put away in a room talking behind closed doors, and not all the members together making a collective decision.
Well, I think that there are, you know, I don't feel this is just, my personal vision is we cannot cut our way out of this debt.
Right.
And all the trillions of dollars we cut out of the budget are people like firefighters, teachers, and police who are going to lose their jobs. So I feel like we can't lose that connection, and we have to understand that when we cut deficits, we're talking about millions of potential jobs that are going to be lost. So this ultimately may help to rebuild some of the economy, or it may not. But in the meantime, this is a very painful time that we're going through, and if you're one of those people who's been out of work for 6 months or longer, you know what I'm talking about. This is really, we are talking about bare bottoms and putting food on the table. We're talking about, if you heard at the top of the show, that the number of homeless children going to school has dramatically increased, 41%. I mean, there are some real costs here, and they're going to cause some real problems. And so this idea that we're only focused on cutting our way out of this, I have to say, I really don't agree with that. I don't think it's going to be enough. So, yes, politicians need to be more accountable, and we need that everybody to have a little dose of common sense, and we need to be very thoughtful about how we cut and where we cut, because there are real people at the other end of those dollars, and I want to make sure they're cared for, and I know many of my listeners feel the same way, and you do too, I'm sure. 404-872-0750. Let's continue on. David joins us on the line from Winston. Hi, David.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a few things I wanted to ask you about. I have removed some money from 401ks. I cashed in a beneficiary account that was left to me by my deceased wife recently, just because I'm fed up with the Russian roulette kind of attitude up in Washington. And I've got a few places where I think the money can do better. One is just to pay off my house.
Okay.
Now, the 401k that I borrowed from can easily be undone. I can just pay it off. So, I mean, it was a little bit of...
You borrowed money from the 401k. You didn't liquidate.
Well, there were two different 401ks. One was my personal one that I contributed to, and one was one that my wife had contributed to while she was alive, and I became the beneficiary, so I was able to remove the money without paying the penalty on it.
Okay.
So I'm sitting on this money, and I have a place to park it now where I think I can get about 4% back, which is better than my 401k was performing anyway.
Okay.
So I'm looking for a little bit of advice from you. I mean, I realize that a lot of people think that's extreme, but I'm still recovering from a 42% loss in 2008. You know, me and the rest of the world, I guess.
Yep, me too. So what's your question for me?
What would you have me do with about $50,000 of that money? for the near future until things stabilize in Europe and perhaps we get a better grip on things here.
You know, I feel like leaving money in a 401k is a good idea. I don't like the idea that you borrowed from it because it just means you have to pay it back with interest. So if you're not earning anything in that money, which in a bank account it's not earning anything, then you're just losing money. So maybe you're not losing money because the stock market's going down, so I guess you could play that game.
But is it not true that the interest that I pay on putting that money back is also mine?
It is yours. So you have enforced savings, if that's how you're looking at it. You know, just be aware that if you lose that job or if you choose to leave it, you'll have to pay all that money back in 60 days. So whatever you put that money into has to be, your money's got to be liquid enough that you can repay it. And if you don't repay it, then you pay taxes and penalties on it.
Right.
So there's just some, I want you to be aware of the risks involved. As for even getting 4%, is that 4% you're tying up your money for 5 years, or is that 4% and you can liquidate it at any time and that's a guaranteed return? Because that's pretty high.
Yes, it is high, and it is liquid. It's liquid money. I can get it out at any time.
Okay. Well, I can't imagine what kind of risk you're taking for that, but... you know, I'm not, far be it for me to, you know, say to you, I don't think that's the right choice. It seems like you've made these decisions. I do agree that the government is playing a little bit of Russian roulette with our economy, and I agree it's very terrifying.
Yeah.
I also think that when people get hungry and they're out of work, they get angry, and I'm very disturbed by the North London riots that took place last night and this morning.
I didn't even hear about it. I haven't been on the news, really.
Just happened. I mean, the police were completely caught unawares. They thought it was going to be a peaceful march, and it turned into anything but. There was some shooting, very unusual for London. People had guns. They were breaking windows. They were, you know, setting things on fire. I mean, it was quite the riot.
Ouch.
And the police were unprepared for it. And
wow.
That's London. So, yeah. And you'll remember a couple of years ago, the Muslim community of Paris set 1,500 cars on fire. So people who don't have enough to do makes me very nervous. As for your money, I think, you know, again, if it's liquid and you feel like you understand what the risks are and you can get 4%, that's better than anything I would tell you to do with that money. So good for you. 404-872-0750. It's 44 minutes past the hour. Let's see if we can get a couple of other calls in. Chris joins us on the line from Griffin. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. What's on your mind?
Fantastic. Hey, just a quick summary. Basically, taking a lease on a house that I will have availability to at the first week of October. That's when my current lease runs up, and then that's when the owner will be out of that house, and I will be able to take possession of it. However, they want to meet next week and to do the contract. Of the agreement, and then also take the first and last month's rent, and not just hold the checks, but actually, cash them and hold all my money for basically 45 days. I just didn't know if that's a common practice or...
Well, do you want, if you don't want to do that, they're wondering how serious you are as a renter, right?
I would think.
They have to make sure that they have somebody in that property. And
right.
I think 45 days out to ask you to put up first and last month's rent is not unreasonable.
Okay.
Because they're taking that property off the market. But what I would say to you is, I mean, you could say to them, look, I'll give you the first month's rent now, and in, 15 days before I move in, I'll give you the last month's rent, or whatever it is you've agreed to.
Right. Okay.
Because, that
makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I feel it's, as a landlord, I mean, this will let you, might laugh at this, but... For the tenants that we get for one of our properties, they pay a whole year up front.
Okay, wow.
So, this is a unit that is attractive to foreign graduate students. They don't have a credit history in this country. They come here for 2 years to go to graduate school. We take a year up front. So, I think that different landlords have different needs.
Right, okay.
And, if you don't want to rent this property, go find another one, and they'll put it back in the market. But they have to have some sort of understanding that you're going to be there.
Right.
So
okay.
I don't think it's completely unreasonable, and maybe you can just negotiate it a little bit. Say, listen, I recognize what the issue is. I'm here. I'm signing this. But I definitely want to, would you be open to, giving you first month on this date and, the last month on this date, and see what they say. 47 minutes past the hour. We've got news, weather, and traffic coming up at the top of the hour. Don't forget to pick up today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There's a special report that examines the future of Atlanta and what it would take to build a new economy for Metro Atlanta. Very important and very related to what we're talking about today. It is 47 minutes past the hour. Mark Titel is in next to talk about foreclosures and short sales. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
53 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Link. Thanks for listening today. Mark Titel is with us now. GetOutStartOver.com. He's our foreclosure and short sale guy on the ground. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So what's going on in your office this week?
Well, this week I had a client that walked into my office to list her condo for short sale in Norcross.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a one-bedroom, one-bath condo that she bought for $75,000 in 2005. And 3 years ago, she got married, has a child, and a family no longer fits the one-bedroom, one-bath unit.
You know as well as I do that the quickest way to try and have to buy a new place is to get married and have a kid, right? Buy a one-bedroom,
right.
You know you're going to outgrow it.
That's
all right, right. So what happened? So she can't fit into the condo anymore, so what happened?
Well, she moved out with her family, but the condo cannot be rented out and cannot be sold at this time.
Oh, HOA rules.
That's right. HOA does not allow rentals in the complex as they met the 20% threshold long time ago, sometime in 2001. So since 2001, no new renters and no new leases in that complex.
Okay.
So, you know, they applied for the hardship, and the hardship request was denied. Then her mother-in-law moved in to live there. The board just attacked her with the letters and saying, no, nobody is allowed to rent, even your mother-in-law, even immediate family member.
Well, she could just say, my mother-in-law's not renting, and just, you know, there's no lease.
Right. Even though it is still non-owner occupied unit, somebody, even a guest that stays there, they have a guest rule, so they have to have tenancy there, even though it may be $1 a month, but there is a tenancy there because not the homeowner lives there, but the guest lives there. So units now are selling there for $20,000 or $25,000.
Oh, what a heartbreak.
That's right. And there are so many foreclosures and vacancies in the complex, so the person is just stuck in nowhere. They have only choice to let it take into foreclosure process and give it back to the bank, or they have to do the short sale. They have no choices.
I don't understand. Well, there is a choice. I mean, she could put her mother-in-law on the condo dock. I mean, on the deed to the property, and then her mother's an owner.
That may be a possibility also, absolutely. However, if she does that, if let's say she adds the mother-in-law on the deed, then the note holder, the bank, can accelerate the loan because what happens here is it's a passing of the ownership. Even though, you know, they agreed, you know, and there's a key question here. Will they force her to refinance and accelerate the loan because she passes that ownership to the mother-in-law? Or will they let her be there with that added person?
I have to say that since it's in the family, probably that would not be an issue. But, you know, you'd have to talk to a real estate lawyer. But the bigger issue is that's this one woman's problem. This whole complex sounds like it's under siege right now. And if you've got litigation in the complex, lenders aren't going to lend there anyway, no matter how many people are renting, right?
That is correct. And what we're seeing here, that in Atlanta, we are leaders of having homeowners associations where they prohibit the rents right across the cities and right across the county. And because of that, there are no renters allowed in any complex. The owners have no choice either to sell the property or take the foreclosure. And that is, I think, is the biggest problem in the condo market because it hit everybody. The moment foreclosure takes place in your complex, everybody's prices just drop. So everybody is affected by that.
Interesting. So it sounds like, what are you proposing? What do you think is a solution here?
Well, first of all, we need to make sure that the board, HOA boards, understand that times are tough and we need to change the rules. There are extraordinary times and requires extraordinary measures. Abandon the rent prohibitions in the complexes till the market recuperates. That would be number one. And number two, we may want to get to the legislation and ask them to pass the rules and regulations that prohibits HOAs to enforce the rental restriction rules, because during that crisis, the entire crisis time.
Well, the problem with that is you've got settled law. So now if you're asking for states to get involved, you're going to set up, and this is a problem, I totally agree with you, but you might set up a situation where the HOAs are going to, let's say, anybody could rent. Now you've got 50% of units renting. How would you ever get back to a place where you have only 20% and the property qualifies for Fannie Freddie? You might not, for it could be a decade until you get all those tenants out of there.
But, you know, getting back from $20,000 values back to a 70s and 100 may take us 10 or 15 years. So what is better for us? Are we all should be bankrupt, or should we help ourselves? That is the key question. Just sitting and doing nothing is not an option.
It's so interesting. Mark Keitel, thank you so much. It's great to have you back, and good thinking. We'll talk to you again next week.
Great. Talk to you soon.
All right, everybody. The music's playing, and that means we're out of time. Sorry about that, but I'll be back again next week, and actually sooner, because we've got Carathon, so I'm going to be on the radio Thursday night with my good buddy Walter Reeves for our annual Inside and Out of the House show starting at 7. We are raising money to cure kids who have cancer. I hope you'll join us for this effort this week. Can't wait. Until then, find me online, thinkglink.com, and don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Have a great week, everybody.